You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. And of course, this feature out of John Gentile. I'm here with M. Moore. Also, that's not a feature. Well, M. co-head editor or whatever M is.
Co-head. Yeah.
Co-head
the rhyming.
M.
Yeah.
And we've got a special guest. We've got Andy of Sell the Heart Records and Andy of Tsunami Bomb. Andy, what's happening, man?
What's going on, everyone?
So Andy's got a big shindig going down. It's August 1 and 2, the day after Punk New Summer Soiree. August 1 and 2, the Sell the Heart Records 15th anniversary. It's going to be a party. Where's it at? One of the punkest of all venues, 924 Gilman Street. Starts at 6:30 both days. You should go. Oh, here's who's playing. Friday, Tsunami Bomb, Middle-Aged Queers, Build Us Airplanes and One Arm Joey. And Saturday, Death by Stereo, M Section, Ricky Frankel favorite, Hot Lung, Houndtooth, and Datara. And let's play a song. Andy, what song should we play? Should we play Tsunami Bomb? Should we play Death by Stereo? Should we play something from a Sell the Heart band? What do you want to play?
Let's play a Sell the Heart band. Maybe Build Us Airplanes.
Okay, and this is Build Us Airplanes on Sell the Heart Records. We'll be right back.
I know it's time.
Sell the Heart Records has been around 15 years. They put out a lot of cool records. They put out stuff by Middle-Aged Queers, which is a group of literal middle-aged queers that play kind of not first-wave punk, but influenced by first-wave punk. And every time they email me, they let me know about the name. They're like, don't be offended by our name. We are actually middle-aged queers, which I feel is not necessary, but it's nice for them to say. Like Andy, if there wasn't LGBT people in that band, would the name be offensive?
I don't think so. I mean, there's the queers, you know, and to my knowledge, I don't think
is the queers offensive in 2025?
I don't think so. I think anyone that's offended by it needs to kind of lighten up a little bit, to be perfectly honest with you. I think there's a time and place to be like properly offended by something, and dude, for like a punk rock band, I don't think it's the time or place. Yeah.
What's funny about the queers is when they adopted that name, the term queer was an insult. And now that word has been totally reclaimed by the LGBT community. And so now it's not an insult at all. So what do we do with that, right, Andy? What do we do with that?
Almost like a badge of honor, you know?
But like, if you say that guy's queer, that's not an insult. That's a descriptor. You know what I mean?
Totally. Yeah. Hmm.
So what does that mean with the band The Queers?
I don't know. They've been around for so long.
But the queers are not queer, but the middle-aged queers are.
Yeah, but I mean, again, like I don't really think it's that big of a deal at all. And if anyone is offended, I think that they should just chill out.
Andy's actually put out a bunch of really cool comps as well, including more than just another comp, which is all Operation Ivy coverage, which pretty much sold out like right away. Like, isn't that totally sold out?
No, so that one actually didn't sell out as fast. You might be thinking of the Rancid comp that we did, which was the And Out Come the Lawsuits. That one sold out like super fast.
And did you get sued?
No. Funny story about that one, actually. So shortly after it came out, a friend of mine who happens to be friends with Matt Freeman was having like a birthday party here in the East Bay. And so I went to that birthday party, and Matt Freeman and his wife actually were at the party. And so, you know, I've never met Matt Freeman before in my life. So I wasn't about to like go up to him and like just be like, "Hey man, blah, 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 I did this thing." But his wife actually recognized the logo, because I was wearing one of my hoodies and it had the Sell the Heart logo. And she's like, oh, that's the label that did the thing, the comp. And I'm like, oh yeah, like my band does this thing. And you know, did this comp. And so she's like, "Hey, Matt, come here." And so I got to like kind of talk with Matt Freeman about it a little bit. And he actually kind of jokingly said, "Dude, what's up with the name? Like, you know, we're not going to sue you or anything." And I'm like, no, that's the joke. Like, that's kind of what makes it so funny. It's like, you know, here we are doing all these ripoffs of your songs. And, you know, we just thought it was hilarious to do it that way. Because we kind of kept it in with a theme with the Jawbreaker tribute that we did too. We called that one Lawbreaker, you know, so...
Do you think the Rancid guys have thin skin or not thin skin?
I don't think so. I mean, Matt Freeman seems to me like he's kind of like a ball buster, you know, like the type of guy that takes no shit, you know, or no guff, you know. But I mean, he's always only ever seemed to be nice when I've seen him, you know. But he just kind of has like an air about him, I think, where he's just like, you don't really want to like mess around too much with him, you know. I've never met Tim Armstrong, so I have zero clue. And then Lars seems kind of chill. And then their new drummer seems really, really chill. So I'm sure he's fine.
He's been in the band for like 17 years.
I'm sorry?
You mean he's been in the band for 17 years now or so?
Oh no, I think he's been in the band. Yeah, he's been in the band longer than I think Brett Reed was, you know.
Brandon Strucker, I think his name is.
Something like that, yeah.
Also, and we'll get to the meat of the interview kind of soon, but or you know, I mean, I'm having fun just talking to Andy. Sell the Heart Records also released a Fugazi covers comp with the last ever Narboots track. What's it like to release the last ever Narboots track, Andy? How's that feel?
It feels pretty good. I mean, we are all Narboots, so you know, it's something that I find a little bit that I hold on to, you know, for dear life when I'm in like a pinch. I'll be like, you know what? I did release the last Narboots song, so at least I've got that going for me. Yeah, that comp actually has the last Screw 32 song too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fun fact.
You know what's interesting is a lot of, and actually give people background on the Punkish podcast. We never give people back, like on some podcasts they're like, and today we're going to be talking to Jello Biafra. You know, Jello Biafra, noted founder of the Dead Kennedy. It's like, yeah, we know who Jello is. We don't need the preamble. Let me give the quick preamble about Sell the Heart Records. Sell the Heart Records, the Bay Area record label. It's run by Andy and Tsunami Bomb. They put out a lot of records. They've put out stuff by Fat Heaven, M Section, Moonraker, Cross Keys, Rad Al, Sammy K, Middle Age Queers. They just put out a Middle Age Queers record this year, which is an homage to Motley Crue. The new Middle Age Queers record, Theater of Shame, references Motley Crue. Andy, where do you stand on Motley Crue?
You know, I consider myself to be not a fan of Motley Crue. Like, I've never gone out and bought any of their records or anything, but I get down with some Motley Crue. They have some good songs for sure.
Is middle-aged yeah. queer saluting Motley Crue, making fun of them, or simply reclaiming the image as their own?
No, it's absolutely like an homage to Motley Crue. Like, my understanding is that Motley Crue is one of Sean, the lead singer's, like, favorite bands of all time. So, you know, it's tongue-in-cheek, but it's kind of a bit of an homage. I mean, Motley Crue objectively do rock. I mean, like, their songs are pretty badass, like, you know, many of them. They also have some trash out there, you know, like, some of their stuff's just not very good. But, I mean, shoot, they had, like, these huge, huge, huge hits in the 1980s and early 90s. I don't think that they've come out with a song in the last 20 years that's really been notable to my knowledge. And I've never seen them live, but, you know, they were pretty rad. I'm not going to lie.
So Sell the Heart Records is run by Andy. They're actually, lately they've been kind of in overdrive. They put out 4 records this year so far. In 2024, you guys went like kind of real crazy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. Holy shit, Andy, you put out 21 records last year.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And actually, I've done more than 4 this year. It's closer to like 6. I think wow. It's 6 this year so far. But yeah, this year I actually decided to scale things back a bit. I'm probably going to get to around, if all things go correctly, according to plan, I'll probably hit around 10 or 11 this year, which is about half of what I did last year. Yeah, I needed to kind of scale things back and give myself a little bit more room to breathe, so to speak, so that each release could get a little bit more proper attention. And it's honestly been the right call, because so far all of these releases, I think, have done they've all done well. You know, like, historically, like, thankfully most of my releases do okay, and like they kind of pay for themselves and all that good stuff. But so far I've seen a really good showing from all of these releases so far. Yeah.
Why do you want to have a record label? Is it because you want, I guess, maybe less known artists to get out there? Is it because you want to be kind of a wheel and deal and big shot? What do you do a record label for?
It's mostly for the cocaine. There's a lot of cocaine that comes with it. No. I've actually never done cocaine. Don't do drugs, kids. No, you know, years ago, I just kind of flirted with the idea, and I thought it'd be really cool to kind of become a bit of like a curator, or, you know, a bit of a tastemaker, so to speak. And it's not something like a place of ego or anything like that. I just felt like it'd be a really fun thing to do. And it started off with the intention of really just documenting the local scene that I was a part of, which was in like the North Bay area, like Santa Rosa, Petaluma, that whole area of California. But it very quickly just started expanding out to other parts of the state. And, you know, I eventually even started connecting with bands from across the country. And then inevitably bands from all over the world. Like, I have some bands that I've worked with in Europe, band from South Korea. And so far, that's pretty much it. I haven't really tapped into any other bands from like Japan or South America or Africa or Canada yet. But I've worked with other labels though in several other countries, and yeah, it's just grown, you know, so much over the last 15 years, and we're still very small. I mean, it's very much a one person operation. You know, I work with other folks that help me, like, you know, I'll hire like a PR agent, and I'll hire like graphic artists, and, you know, obviously like hire people to do like mastering, and then the pressing obviously is done by people. But the vast majority of like the grunt work is just done by myself. You know, in hindsight, I do wish that it could have been more of like a team effort, because it did start as it was meant to be like a bit of a team of 5 people, but it kind of whittled down to just me carrying the torch after about a year. And that's all well and good. You know, it wasn't because of anything bad, but I think I was just the one that seemed to have a little bit more, for lack of a better word, like kind of passion to keep it going. And so that's where we're at.
So let's talk a little bit about the upcoming celebration. Actually, first question, why 924 Gilman?
Well, it's here right in our backyard. I mean, I live literally about a mile and a half away from there. And it's just such a special place for the East Bay. And since the label's home is the East Bay area, I wanted to do it here. And I really wanted to do it at a place that was all ages. And, you know, there's really only a couple of places here in the Bay Area that you can do all ages shows anymore. And I figured 924 Gilman would be such a great place to do it because they have the infrastructure. It's all ages. There is actually a really cool brewing company that's situated right next door to it now. So
is that Pyramid Brewing?
Well, Pyramid used to have a location there across the street. But no, there's a place called Gilman Brewing Company that's literally right next door to it now. And I figured, you know, if there were, you know, adults that wanted to, you know, break away and have a, you know, a beer, they could do that. Because Gilman obviously doesn't serve beer and they really don't promote the use of alcohol. But, you know, folks are going to want to have a beverage, so they can do that. So I kind of thought that it was like a perfect marriage of locations, you know, and like allow for young folks to come if they wanted to come. And then for the old heads like us to kind of hang out. And it's like the perfect size, I think, too.
When I lived in the Bay Area, I liked 924 Gilman a lot. They had a lot of cool shows there. But, I haven't been there in probably 10 years. There was kind of that, what's the word I'm looking for? Kind of clickiness, you know, of it. Is that still there? You feel that's still there? Has that kind of washed away? Because now it seems the people running it aren't quite the same mentality as the people that were running in the 90s and 00s, if you will.
Right. No, I know what you mean, and I definitely know what you're talking about. I didn't necessarily experience that directly over the years because the only other times that I've really ever been involved with stuff with Gilman is like the handful of times that I've played there. And otherwise, like I wasn't really that heavily involved with what was going on at Gilman. But I heard plenty of stories, and I know plenty of people that have been very involved in there. They've told me all about that. I don't see it that way at all. Like in the last 2 years, I've actually done a number of things with the Gilman crew, and they've been nothing but awesome, you know, and they seem to be way more open-minded about, you know, having, you know, bands of a certain stature coming through, and they're doing more events that might have been frowned upon in terms of like, oh, like you're having to charge too much money for these tickets, when it's like, well, but we need people to come through the door so that we can pay our rent, you know, like, we can't like, but I think that they recognized that some of the purity tests that they were holding on to were just a little outdated. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just they needed to kind of let go of some of that older way of thinking. And so they seem to have embraced a bit of a more like open-mindedness to some of these things. They still hold true to like a lot of their core ethics and values, 1000%, you know. But, you know, if Scal, who's huge now, wants to come play at Gilman, they can play at Gilman. It's not a big deal, you know, but they're going to charge, you know, accordingly for what Scal is worth now, you know. And I just use them as an example. You know, I don't know anything else about like any other bands, but they've had a ton of really good shows there lately, which is really rad for them.
What's one of Sell the Heart Records' biggest successes, do you think? Like record, like either a record or a show that really popped off or really made an impact?
Well, the tribute records have actually all been pretty successful. The Fugazi tribute record was the first one I did, and that, you know, sold through pretty well. I still have about 10 copies left, but, you know, that was the first record that I pressed 500 copies of, which for me was a lot, you know. And, you know, it took a while, but, you know, I'm down to my last handful of copies. And we were able to actually raise a bunch of money for some local nonprofits through that record. That was kind of part of the whole idea of doing that record. You know, I want to say that it was around like $3,500 in total that we were able to raise and donate. The Rancid tribute, like I said, sold out super fast. We had to repress that actually twice. And I'm out of all my copies. I think that there might be a handful floating around with Lava Socks. The Jawbreaker tribute record is mostly sold out. That one's done well. And then, yeah, the Operation Ivy tribute record, I'm down to my last 11 copies. And I think Lava Socks has like 30 or something like that. And we pressed 500 of those too. But in terms of like non-compilation records, the first Nexstars record sold through really well, which is great. And we just announced their new record today through Punk News. Thank you guys for doing that. Another band that was really quickly sold through was Datura, that band from Washington. They're playing on night two. They're kind of like a goth kind of dark wave band. And yeah, they sold through really well. Oh, the Humanities record that we released that earlier this year, that one sold through really well. Yeah, I mean, those are three that I can pick up off the top of my head.
What's either a record or a project that you would consider a failure in that either it was a rad record and people just weren't into it, or you got the record and you're like, wow, this is not a good record. What's a big failure that you've experienced?
Well, I wouldn't have said that any of them weren't good records, because like I stand behind every record that I put out as a band or a record that I liked, you know, because otherwise I wouldn't have released it. Like if I just wasn't into it, I wouldn't have released it. However, there's definitely been a couple of records that just did not sell through very well. And like, I think what it comes down to is that at the end of the day, I just didn't have the right audience for it. But the first Raised on TV record, that record unfortunately just like did not move super fast at all. And it's still not really moving very well, even after a few years. Their second record actually moved better, which is great, but we actually pressed fewer copies of that. So, take that for what it is, but they're a great band. States of Nature is another band that, you know, unfortunately their second album that I did with them, it just, for some reason, it could not build any momentum. And I hate to say it, but I think we had the right audience for them, but I feel like they just didn't really do a lot to help kind of push things through their channels, you know? Because, you know, here's the thing about being on a record label, especially like a small independent label like myself, right? I don't have the same kind of infrastructure as like, say, Epitaph Records or even like Asian Man Records, because like Asian Man's a very small operation too. It's basically just Mike and like whoever volunteers with him, right?
And his mom.
He's got a massive audience, right? Like hundreds, probably hundreds of thousands of people are very well aware and have purchased records from Asian Man Records over the years, right? I've got maybe like 5 to 8% of that at best, you know, over the time that I've been doing it. So, you know, I need the bands to do just as much push as I'm doing on their end. And that includes playing live shows, trying your best to go on tour, even though it's super expensive to do it. And, you know, just staying out there and being present. And, you know, I'm not trying to throw them under the bus because they're a great band and like they're my friends, but I do think that there were some opportunities that they had as a band that they just kind of didn't really take, you know? And I think that hurt the release, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. But the album smokes. It's an amazing record, you know, and I love that record.
Actually, here's a question for you. In my day job, let me rephrase this. Sometimes, in my opinion, actually, this is not even related to my day job, because my clients are pretty cool. But in my experience, some bands want to win. They want to succeed, and they want to win. And some bands consciously or subconsciously want to fail. Do you agree with that?
I don't agree with that necessarily. I don't think it's about it being a desire to fail. I think it's more of like a lack of motivation to succeed, if that makes sense.
Well, so to me, that's wanting to fail, but go ahead.
Well, no, sure. And you know, we can leave that open to interpretation, like, you know, semantically, but I don't know, maybe it's just cause like I tend to default on like erring on like keeping things more positively charged, but I understand what you're trying to say. And like, I think that there are a lot of things that are low-hanging fruit that bands don't recognize as being things that they could be doing on a daily or weekly or even monthly basis that can keep momentum going without having to do a lot of heavy lifting, you know? And especially nowadays, because we have a million different ways to put your music out there and broadcast yourself and kind of get in front of people, it's created more challenges, but I think it's created way more opportunities, you know? And I think you have to kind of embrace those things. And as it feels like it can be a burden, but I think that as long as you make it fun and find a way to make it creative, you can leverage all of those things and use it to your advantage. But I will say, like, there are plenty of bands that simply do not care. And they're like, no, the music's out. I recorded it. We've put it out. It's now up to the audience to kind of come and do their thing. Right. And I'm just going to kind of play shows whenever I want to. And that's perfectly fine if that's what you want to do. What I would caution bands about, though, is like, well, if that's the way that you feel about it, or that's what you're going to be doing, you really shouldn't be pairing up with a label, because now you're kind of putting all of the onus on them to do all that heavy lifting. And that's really, it's just not fair, you know? So especially if you want like the end result to be like some fair and even split of like whatever little money comes in, you know? And like, I'm not trying to sound like, I don't want to sound negative when I say this, but I've had a couple of experiences with a few bands that I feel definitely did not do their part in, you know, helping to promote and like push things through. And whatever the circumstances were, at the end of the day, I'm just like, yeah, man, I hope you don't expect to like really see anything from this, because A, there is nothing. And even if it does come in, like, it's going to be very little, you know? So, unfortunately, it was kind of met with like, yeah, I don't care. And it's like, oh, okay, well, if you didn't care, then why the hell did we do this then? You know? Yeah. And that, like, it, to be honest with you, it hurt my feelings. You know, it made me feel bad, because I was like, okay, so I just did all that work basically for nothing then. That's really how I felt about it. And thankfully, that's only been very rare. You know, that's only happened like twice, I would say, in like all the records that I've put out, all the bands that I've worked with. But those two times, it's just like, dude, that's still like, it stings a little bit, because you're just like, I guess you really just don't care. You don't really give a shit. And that sucks, because I did, you know.
We're going to switch it over to a positive tip in one second, but I'll make a comment. Is I worked on a pretty big project that came out, and I learned a very valuable lesson that I think maybe Andy is kind of talking about too. Let's say there's two people, and your job is to move 100 tons of rock. And so I get there Monday at 8 a.m., and I start moving rock. And person B's like, oh, I'll be there tomorrow. And you're like, all right, that's fine. It's a team. I don't really care. It's 50-50 work. If it's 70-30, whatever. We just want to get the thing done. Tuesday, they show up at noon, you know, and they leave at 3, you know. Wednesday, they show up at, you know, 2 and leave at 4, you know. And Thursday, you've been working hard all week, or Friday, you've been working hard all week. And they say, you know, I quit. And you realize it's easier for them to quit because they haven't put that much sweat equity into the project. Whereas when right. you put a – so the point being is, when working with other people, if you have a combined goal, then it's important to make sure both parties have some sort of investment in it, and they can't just walk away, because otherwise you'll get left holding the bag a lot of the time. That's my advice.
No, to that. Totally. And I will say this, like, I do feel like bands do automatically, at least in the situation that I'm in, that they, I think, believe that their level of sweat equity ends at the fact that they went through the recording process. Right. And they're like, well, that's our part. And which is like, that's not invalid. Like, you know, yeah, you did the hard part of recording the album and putting it together, all the songwriting, all that stuff, all of that is valid. And like, you spent that money, because like, for me, like, I don't pay for recordings or anything like that. Right. But at the same time, okay, well, you've done all that, but unless you actually put it out there and promote it and do something with the record, what's going to happen with it? It's literally like, no one's going to hear it. So that's where I come in. And that's when I, you know, I'm trying to like really elevate it, but I can only do so much. And that's where, like you said, it's like, you have to also add your equity to it too. You know,
what?
And I always try to emphasize that when I'm talking to bands about it, you know.
What's some basic advice you would give to someone that's looking to start a record label kind of similar to yours? Similar ambition, similar level, similar love of the music, as opposed to a record label where someone just wants to make bucks?
I mean, first and foremost is, I would say that you have to be really honest with yourself about how much you're willing to invest both your time and your money. Because there's really no money to be made in this level of you know, the music business, as it were, right? So that being said, you still do need to treat it like a job, because, you know, if you don't put the time in, the effort in, unless you happen to be like connecting with a band that's just going to catch fire, you know, and blows up with the luck, you know, you're going to have to push it and you're going to have to work really hard to make it work. So you have to be really honest with yourself about what you're willing to do. And then based off of what you come up with, you have to then act accordingly. So like for myself, like the last couple of years, I really pushed way too hard. And like it, like I could tell, like I was like, oh man, I have to scale back. So that's why this year I did that. And then years before, you know, I was doing more of like a snail's pace with stuff, like, you know, at least like 5-6 releases a year. And that was kind of it. So that worked for me, but you know, I kind of ramped it up thinking, you know, like maybe I'll build. And then eventually it was like, nope, I hit a wall. So I need to like scale it back. And then additionally, I would just say, we have a lot of different ways now where you can release music and you don't have to go by like the old model of, you know, oh, I got to press like 500 of this or like 1,000 of this or like whatever. Maybe consider just pressing like 100 copies of something, you know, and seeing if they sell through. And then if they all sell through, you can always repress it, you know. But it's not always advantageous to press a bunch of stuff, saving on your costs per unit, you know, when in reality, there's no way you would need that many copies. And I think you have to just really be honest with yourself about like what a band can do, you know, because, and again, I'm really not trying to paint bands as like, you know, people that lie about it or anything, that's not what it's about. But I think that sometimes bands don't fully, I don't think that they're necessarily like very aware of how small of an audience they actually have versus like what they think they have, you know? And cause I, you know, I've run into this issue where like we've pressed 300 copies of something and we've sold like 50, you know what I mean? And that's a bummer. That's a huge bummer. So, you know, you really have to be mindful of data and use data, you know, use your gut, you know, don't be afraid to listen to your gut. Yeah.
A few last questions for you, Andy. I've seen Andy at Punk Rock Bowling 2 years in a row. Andy, did you have fun this year at Punk Rock Bowling? What did you enjoy? And what did you find maybe? I'll kick it off. Punk Rock Bowling, Flag, amazing. Gang of Four, amazing. Linville Golding of the Specials, amazing. Bands that I wasn't really super wowed by, I think it was that band Bad Nerves. I thought they were all right. I wasn't blown away by them. I'm trying to think who, honestly, I really just skipped, like, Social Distortion, I'm not a fan, was not wowed by him. What did you think was awesome Punk Rock Bowling, and what was your experience at Punk Rock Bowling this year? And do you plan on going to Punk Rock Bowling next year, and who do you think is going to headline?
Let's see, I'll take these one at a time. So the three that you mentioned were three of my choices. I thought Flag was amazing. I thought Linville Golding with Agrolites was amazing. And Gang of Four, awesome. Really, really loved Amigo the Devil. Thought Bridge City Sinners killed it. The band Civic, I was really impressed by as well. I actually bought their record recently after, because I had never heard them, that they were great. Spiritual Cramp crushed it. Those guys are killing it. The Damned were great. They're always Damned. Great. You know, I really enjoyed, why can't I think of his name? Hook, Peter Hook. And I felt like it was a good performance, but at the end of the day, like I felt like maybe it didn't hit as well as I was hoping it was going to for Punk Rock Bowling. You know, I think I'd like to see him in like a club.
What do you think of him tearing off his shirt at the end? Am thought it was cool. I thought maybe not quite as necessary. What do you think of him tearing off his shirt, Elvis style?
Whatever. I don't really care. I mean, it's a pro rock move. You know, what are you going to do? Yeah. Lamborghini Girls were great. Trying to think of who else. Oh, Pie Tasters are always great. One of my highlights for sure. Kilograms were great. Lee Field show with Shannon and the Clams was another Lee really Field great was show.
Amazing. Did I see you there? Did I talk to you there?
Yeah, I saw you there. Yep. Yeah, that was all a great time. And then you asked me who I didn't care for, right?
If you want, you don't have to if you don't want to.
Yeah, I also didn't really care for Social D. I mean, like, what I've seen them, and I actually like Social D, but they're kind of boring live. See, me, I'm going to be honest, you know. Yeah.
Me, the Dixon thing is really bumming me out with them. You know what I mean? Oh, like, they're tied in with Dixon. And I like Punk Rock Boing a lot. It bummed me out. And you don't have to comment on this because I know you have to submit to Punk Rock Boing. I thought it was lame that Punk Rock Boing had a Dixon stand there. Of all the people that want to sell stuff there, Dixon, I don't know. I thought that was poor form. But anyway, let's keep it positive. I will be at Punk Rock Boing next year probably, unless it's a lot of terrible. But it'll probably be real good and I'll probably be there. Who do you think should headline Punk Rock Boing 2026?
You know who I'm surprised hasn't yet?
Middle-aged queers.
Middle-aged queers should definitely headline every show, because and they should only play Gary's Making Biscuits over and over and over. But I think AFI. They should bring in AFI, because AFI has never played it, to my knowledge, and they would totally be able to be a headliner. I would love to see either Amel and the Sniffers or Idols as a headliner. And I think either one of them could easily be a headliner at this point. I think Jawbreaker could be a headliner for them, and they could get him for that. Let's see. I'm trying to think of who else would be like on my... I mean, that's what comes to the top of my head, you know? I mean, I'd love to see a Boss Tones reunion, but I don't see that happening ever, so... unfortunately. And then, yeah, that's it. That's all I got.
Operation Ivy, will there ever be a reunion? And do you want to see a reunion? Should it possibly exist?
I think there will be one. I do think there will be one at some point. It's not necessarily even for the reasons that I think a lot of people think, like, because there's been like rumors speculating that like there's been like $1 million offers and all that stuff, and they've just turned it down. And I just think that they'll do it eventually just for kicks, you know, just to be like, yeah, F it, let's just do it. You know, why not? There's so much hype around it. People want it. We've got the time. You know, there's no reason not to. I mean, there really isn't a reason not to, in my opinion. And I think that they could totally do it. I know that Jesse Michaels had said, I reached out to him once to be on that Fugazi tribute record. Actually, I reached out to him saying, hey, would you want to do like a solo version of a song? And he actually got back to me. He was very nice. He's like, yeah, man, I'm not really doing music right now because like my voice is kind of not great. And like, I'm not feeling very confident about it. So like, I'm just not really that into doing music at the moment. But, you know, obviously years since then, like, you know, we've seen him do a couple of things like live with like the thing that he did with Tim, where they did the Op Ivy song, and that was really cool. He sounded great. So I really, and Doom Regulator. No, totally. But I think that they'll do it. And I really hope they do it. I hope that they do it like totally under their own terms and I think that they shouldn't make it a big deal. I think that they should do like a one and two and done, you know, and just call it a day. Like not do some crazy extended thing, like no new music. They don't need any new music. Like, as far as I'm concerned, their discography is perfect the way it is. It doesn't need to be re-recorded. No, we've already got Rancid. We've got Common Rider. You know, we've got Classics of Love. We've got Charger. We've got all these other great projects that have come from that group of guys. So I don't think we have to revisit it and potentially ruin it.
Yeah. Dead Kennedys reunion. Will it happen? And do you want to see it?
It would never happen. I'd love to see it, but it'll never happen.
It'll never happen. I don't want to see it. I want to see Jello and the Melvins back together, or I'll accept Jello and Guantanamo School Medicine.
Yeah, I would love to see Jello perform with Melvins, DOA, or Guantanamo School of Medicine. But with the Dead Kennedys, I just don't think it'll be what anyone wants it to be. And I think those wounds are a little too deep.
Sell the Heart Records Fest is coming up August 1 and 2. Andy, what should we particularly look out for, pay attention to at Sell the Heart Records Fest?
Well, I mean, each night we showcase a few of the bands that are on the label, and then we have our guest headliner. The first night being Snobby Bomb, which is the band that I'm in, who are graciously doing it. And then the next night is good friends of mine, Death by Stereo. And, you know, the first night's a little bit more leaning into like the kind of more standard like punk rock. And then second night's a little bit more on like the heavier side. But we also mixed it up with having Deter on there, who's a more like a goth kind of, you know, dark indie rock post-punk band. And, you know, it's a little bit of variety. So if you want to come to both nights, you'll definitely have a variety of bands to listen to. But if you want to lean more towards heavy, go to night two. If you want to lean more like straight ahead punk, go to night one. I'm also doing a really cool raffle where I'm going to be having a bunch of cool prizes, both from the label, and I've got some friends who have donated some stuff for the prize, for the raffle. And, you know, something that is going to be really cool too is that Gilman Brewing is actually going to be doing a special beer for Sell the Heart Records. And it's not directly tied in with Gilman. It's separate from the 924 Gilman club events. But I just, it's funny. I happen to be talking with a couple of the brewers there handing out flyers, and they're like, oh yeah, dude, like here, would you want us to do like a beer for you for the event? And I was like, dude, that'd be amazing. So we started talking about it. And so I actually had a meeting with them today. And so they want to put together on August 3rd, a special launch party for that beer that they're going to do. It's going to be a very small batch, but it's going to be a Sell the Heart Records beer. And they're going to have it available the nights of the shows. And then on, like I said, Sunday, we'll have like a kind of a special event dedicated just for the beer. And we're going to donate some of the proceeds that we raise to 924 Gilman.
How ironic, though. Alcohol making money for 924 Gilman where alcohol is banned. Now that's art. That's art.
Yeah. Yeah. Punk rock, baby. Yeah.
Well, that's very cool. Andy, last question, second last question. What's going on with Tsunami Bomb? What's happening with Tsunami Bomb?
Well, we were in the process of trying to get a new full length done, and we hit a couple snags, but we were able to record some new music, just not a full length. So we do have some releases coming up. We've already released one of the singles. It was released earlier this year called Star Power. And that was part of like a cool tie-in with a nonprofit group called Singing Us a Story. And there are five other songs that are going to be released over the course of the next like 12 months. They're going to be 3 7-inches. So we haven't announced anything yet formally, but you heard it here first. There will be new music coming from Tsunami Bomb over the course of the next 12 months. 3 releases.
Well, there you have it. Breaking news. Andy, anything else you want the listeners to know about the Sell the Heart Records? Instagram is just Sell the Heart. No, I'm sorry. Sell the Heart Records. Anything else you want the people to know about or check out? And, of course, it's selltheheartrecords.bandcamp.com, selltheheartrecords.bigcartel.com. And they've got a cool vinyl club where you can sign up and get all the records over the course of a year, which is pretty neat. And so, yeah. So, Andy, what anything else you want the people to know about?
I mean, really, you said what I was going to say. It was just, yeah, go check out our Big Cartel Bandcamp. We have subscription options where you can, you know, do Bandcamp, pay as little as $5 a month. Or no, it's actually an annual fee now. But you basically get everything we put out, you know, if you do the Bandcamp thing over the course of the year. Same thing with the record club. As you said, if you sign up, you get pretty much everything we release on 12-inch record, on 12-inch vinyl throughout the year. And we have a lot of really cool records and bundle deals and stuff like that, clearance items, all that good stuff. Would love for you to check it out and just support the bands. Go listen to them on whatever streaming site you use. I mean, I'm not a huge, huge, huge advocate for pushing for that. But if that's what you're going to do, we appreciate it. So, yeah, that's all we're about. But 15 years has gone by quick. So we're excited to keep going. Yeah.
Well, Andy, what song should we send them on out with?
Let's hear something from M Section.
Okay. This is something from M Section. And Andy, thank you for being on the show.
You got it. Thanks.
And we are back. And what's happening? What's going on? That was Andy of Sell the Heart Records. Go check him out. Sell the Heart Records Fest is August 1 and 2. A lot of cool bands playing. M, what's happening with you? What's going on?
Try not to melt. It's a million degrees. That's been the main thing.
It was 101 degrees here today, so pretty hot, bro.
Not good. Not good, bro.
Tell me about it, bro. let's hit some news. It was kind of slow news week for a couple weeks, but I think it's kind of picking up now. We got a lot to talk about. GWAR is going on their 40th anniversary tour. It's going to be GWAR, Helmet, Dwarves, and Blood Vulture. And it's a pretty massive tour. It's almost like 3 months, man. It's a long tour, 2.5 months. I'll be at the Philly show. I think. Oh, and also it's the return of Gorgor. Gorgor is GWAR's Tyrannosaurus Rex, so he's probably going to show on up and fight the band and eat the band and eat the audience, and it's going to be a lot of fun. So I will be there in Philly, which is one of the last shows of the tour. Do you think it's best to see the tour early on, late, or in the middle?
I don't think it really matters, to be honest, because I'm trying to think, and it's like I've seen bands at the beginning of their tours, and they've been great, in the middle, and they've been great, and like their last show, and it's been awesome. So I don't think it really matters when. I think how full the T-Rex is will matter, though.
There you go.
Have you ever gotten eaten by the T-Rex?
No, you know, even when I first started going, GWAR, I was a little too old for the whole like getting covered in blood thing, which some people do, which is fun. Big part of it is I don't want to get covered in blood and have to drive home like covered in stickiness. Oh. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so you get it all over your car.
I was never really too into that, but my young cousin is way into that, I never have. I have seen GWAR, and I've seen the World Maggot. I've seen a couple different Gorgors, and sometimes Gorgor is like absolutely like gigantic, like bigger than a real life. Well, of course he's real, bigger than a historical T-Rex. And so I don't know how they get that thing to operate, but it's always awesome and it's a lot of fun. I probably will not get eaten by Gorgor, but I definitely will be at the show, which I'm excited for. Streetlight Manifesto, they've released a new song after delaying their upcoming album. How many years has it been since the last Streetlight Manifesto album? I mean, let me look here.
It's on the last, it's on the delay thing, I think, on Punk News. I don't remember. 2011?
2013, but I think, 2013 was the last one, and the one before that was a covers record. And the one before that was 2007. So in almost 20 years, there's only been one record so far. It might be two. Streetlight Manifesto and Catch 22. Of course, Streetlight Manifesto is a spinoff of Catch 22.
Yeah.
They were and sort of continue to be kind of big deals of punk news. And punkers of a certain audience, like Catch 22 when they were still Catch 22, like that, they were like a huge, huge Scott. Like Catch 22 kind of bridged the area between the end of ska and I guess underground ska. So like they were huge in that they were the third wave ska band that existed after the third wave of ska. And of course, Streetlight Manifesto was just a spinoff of that, and they fought with Victory Records quite a bit. M, what do you think of Catch 22? What do you think of this song? Well, what do you think of Streetlight Manifesto? What do you think of this song? And it's strangely, it's like six. Well, I don't know. Strangely, impressively, it's like 6 minutes long. M,
it's a good length.
Yeah.
Yeah. I never really got into Streetlight Manifesto or Catch 22. I like ska, but I don't know. Like, there's just certain ska bands that don't really click for me, and they're two of them. So they're just not my cup of tea, and I'm not really sure why. Like, again, it's just they didn't click. But yes. What are your thoughts on the bands?
To me, this sounds like third wave ska, and it sounds like not the worst third wave ska, because some third wave ska is brutal, you know. I think this sounds, and I guess this is why Streetlight and Catch 22 have survived, and that like it's third wave ska, but it's maybe not quite as obnoxious as a lot of third wave ska is. I'm not a huge fan, but I think if I was a third wave ska fan, I would like this music. But here's something I did like. Fat Heaven, actually, we should talk about this with Andy, Fat Heaven, who was on Sell the Heart Records, and Crazy the Brains have released a cover of the Ramones' The Crusher. And in the music video, it's got three, I guess you call them semi-pro. And what do you call a pro wrestler that technically gets paid, but gets paid very little for being a wrestler? What do you is that a pro wrestler or what is that?
Semi-pro? I think semi-pro.
Or is that an amateur?
I think it's a step up from an amateur because an amateur doesn't get paid all the time.
So semi-pro.
And semi-pro has regular gigs.
So they had three semi-pro wrestlers, The Crusher, Sazzy Boatwright, and Charles Stunning. And I thought this was kind of amusing. It's a small world. Is The Crusher in this video, I know who that person is. She's the best friend of Lauren of Trash Knife. And I've seen her. She's from Philadelphia. I've seen her around a little bit. I don't know that well. But I'm like, oh, well, like I know that person. You know, so that was kind of interesting. And what do you think of the cover? What do you think of the video?
I thought the cover was great. It's a lot of fun. Same with the video. Like, the video is just awesome. I like the that they have a wrestler actually called The Crusher in it. I think that adds to it. But it's just so fun, and it really kind of shows why people like wrestling, I guess. Like, it gets back to the heart of what it actually is, you know? Which is just like, have fun with your friends, be kind of wacky, do your shit. But I thought the cover was great. Fat Heaven and Crazy in the Brains, I think, should do more together. I'd like a collab record.
Gayla of Fat Heaven is now in Crazy in the Brains, and I suspect that's how this came together.
Ah,
Gayla, the
right.
drummer of Fat Heaven, is now the second guitar player of Crazy in the Brains. I think this cover is great. I think the video is well done. But also, I think the actual technique of the video is really well done. In that, like, the video, look, if this came out in the 90s, like, this would be a pro video on MTV. You know what I mean? And that, like, I like how sometimes they've got the band in the foreground, but then the wrestlers in the background making moves. Or maybe in the foreground, it's got the wrestlers beating each other up. And then, like you'll see the band, like, on the ropes, cheering them on. Like, there's a lot of little touches here that makes the video have more depth than it would have by maybe someone of a less skill. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it looks so cool. There's so much to, like, take in, too.
Right.
Like, multiple watches.
So anyway, it's pretty cool. Usually I'm not big on just covers for the sake of covers, but I think this is really well done, particularly because it's an obscure Ramones song. But M, this is not even technically Ramones' cover. Do you know what it is a cover of?
Is it a TV theme song?
No, it's Dee Dee Ramone solo as Dee Dee King cover, not a Ramones cover. The Ramones cover the Dee Dee King track, which is kind of amusing, I found. I think they should put this out on a 7-inch. This would be cool to have on a 7. Like, this is perfect for a 7-inch, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you could make it, like, wrestling theme. You could have kind of, like, blood splatter.
Yeah, well, there you go. And actually,
sparkles.
The cover could be in the shape of a wrestling ring, and it could come out with, like, 2 or 3 cutouts of wrestlers. There's a lot to do there. Em, tell us about Problem Patterns, one of your favorite bands.
Yeah, Problem Patterns are one of my favorite bands of all time. They're from Belfast, Northern Ireland, and they are great. So they just announced their new EP, which is called Boring Songs for Boring People, which I think is pretty funny. They released a remix EP of their debut full length called Blows Club, and the remix EP is called Blows Clubland, and that came out, I think, last year. So it's really nice to have new music from them. I've listened to their entire discography too much. They're great. If you haven't listened to them, go check them out. But they also released a video for their next song from the EP. So the EP includes their song Sad Old Woman, which features Matt Corvette of Piss Jeans, and that came out earlier this year. It has a great video and is a lot of fun, too. So great song. But anyway, they released a video for their new song called I'm Fine and I'm Doing Great, which, first of all, great song title. I feel like I've said that so many times, with varying degrees of sincerity over the entire course of my life. And the video is really funny. It's it opens and there's a title card, and it says Weekend at Kira's, and it's a Weekend at Bernie's type thing. So they're taking, like, all the band members are taking Kira around, and, all this kind of stuff, and like, here, have a beer, and it just like comes out of their mouth, and like all this kind of stuff. So it's really funny. It's great. And then at the end, Kira wakes up and then just goes back to sleep. So she wasn't. So anyway, it's a good one. They recently played their first two Canadian shows. They played in London, Ontario, and they played Toronto, Ontario. And I thought I was going to be able to make at least one of the shows, and things happened, and I wasn't able to, and I'm super bummed, but I saw lots of great videos online, so I hope they come over again because they're a great band. John, what did you make of it?
Well, I think you should book a show and have them come play your show, Em.
That would be cool.
I think this video is very funny. I love funny video. At this point, I think I'm more pro funny video than serious video. I mean, I'm not saying every band should do funny videos, and I'm not saying I'm against serious. I mean, I'm not saying I'm totally against serious videos. But the fact of the matter is, in 2025, it's hard to do a. You got to be very artsy and very perfect to do a good serious video, I think. But funny videos tend to stick out more. I think this video is funny. I think the song's good, and I think it's cool.
Yeah, more funny videos.
Let's see here. David, speaking of funny videos, David Byrne's
Oh,
gonna put out
yeah.
a new album, man. The new album is called Who Is the Sky? It's out September 5 via
Yes.
Matador. It's got some guests on it, Hayley Williams, St. Vincent, and Tom Skinner. And you want me to kick this off, or you want to kick this off? And he's doing a huge tour as well.
Start her off.
I kind of want to go to see David Byrne because I've never seen any version of the Talking Heads or Talking Heads spinoff. I'd love to see Tom Com Talk Club, but perhaps I'm, as I often am, I'm fighting a battle that even the people that care aren't fighting, and that David Byrne, by all accounts, is a miserable guy, and he's conniving, and he's manipulative, you know. There's a great quote where someone asks, what's the name of the guitar? Chris Franz? Chris Franz. They're like, well, are you just jealous of David Byrne? And he's like, if you knew David Byrne like I know David Byrne, you would not be jealous of David Byrne. And so, all the other talking heads say he's kind of a dick. And also, he's always said, well, I wrote all the music, I wrote all the music. But
Oh, yeah.
all his music after the talking heads has really not been that good, even though publications say it's, bold and daring. To me, it's often kind of bland and boring. Whereas Tom Tom Club is freaking awesome. All the records are like good to super good. I thought this, and so here's why I'm a little just put off. I thought the song was okay, but he does this thing where it's kind of like faux whimsical, faux naive, faux. I'm David Byrne, and I'm your friendly uncle. Ha! And it's like that's not who you are. And I feel you are being manipulative and putting on a like if you just came out and were kind of a dick, like maybe like Danzig, or maybe like I'm trying to think who else is kind of a dick. Or cocky. KRS-One isn't a dick, but he's cocky. If you just came out and said, I'm David Byrne, then I would be more into it. But the fact that he puts on this faux friendly uncle facade, hey, like that, faux friendly uncle facade, I get turned off by it. You know what I mean? So that's my stance on that.
I like faux friendly uncle facade. I think that fits really well because like you can feel under the surface something's like just off.
Really?
I feel that. Like I don't feel like he's having fun, you know?
Oh, so do you think that this is very interesting? So in the video, the video suggests he's having fun, right?
I like the video. I think the video is great. I don't think he's having fun.
No, but like, do you agree the video suggests that he's having fun?
I would say so.
So do you think he's not having fun, but he doesn't want you to know he's not having fun, or he's not having fun and he wants you to know that he's not having fun and he wants you to know that he's wearing a mask?
I kind of think he wants you to know he's wearing a mask. Like, I kind of think it's part of like the art of it. I think the facade is part of it. Because it's a character. I think he's creating the character, but he's like, you guys know I'm not actually the character, right?
See, that's where I'm very still interested in the music of Ben Folds. I haven't followed the last three or four albums, but like Ben Folds, he's got all these super lovey-dovey tracks, but he's been divorced like five times. You know what I
Oh,
mean? So I'm
no.
very interested by that. You know what I mean? And so like I find that he's like, I'll love you forever. and I divorced my last yoga instructor from my current yoga instructor. And like, that's true, you know? And
oh, seriously.
So, you know, so I'm always very interested in that. With David Byrne, I'm not so, see, I think David Byrne wants you to think he's your friendly uncle and he's kind of artsy and he's whimsical. And also what I also get kind of put off by the, like, this video is very musical, but like Broadway musical, where like people are kind of like overacting and, you know, being kind of plastic. And I always find that to be annoying for some reason.
I think in certain contexts it works. I think in this context it works. I don't like the song that much. I think the song's kind of boring, but like the video's great. Like there's the one part where there's a guy and he's on a payphone and he's holding the payphone. He's like looking at it weird and he's on his cell phone. And I thought that was funny. I liked that.
Well, there you have. I'm watching the video right now. I should listen to this video. And I mean, I should listen to this without the video and see if I think it's kind of good or kind of boring. But speaking of something that's not very boring, Danny Miller of Surfport has released yet another solo track. And it's totally different than the last two solo tracks.
Very different.
I don't know if it's her first solo track, but her first one in a while was Take the Hard Way, which was kind of an acoustic sort of hole-ish song, which absolutely blew my mind. I think that's one of the greatest things she's ever done. Then recently she put out a solo track called Fuck You, I'm Hot, which I thought was hilarious and very catchy and clever, and I think it was awesome. This new one, Sugar Kiss Hickey, sounds kind of like a Pixie song to me, and I like this one a whole lot too. I like how all her songs are like totally different, and I feel like if she took all these kinds of different songs and put some kind of connective tissue into them, she could make my favorite album of the year. So I thought this track was cool. I thought it was kind of Pixies-ish, kind of post-punk, and also, you know, kind of funny and kind of abstract like she always is. And I really feel that, you know, there was a bunch of buzz around Surfport when they first came around. Not when they first came around. The first record, because they actually were around about 4 or 5 years before the first album. And I feel a lot of that has kind of faded away. And I feel that's unfortunate because I feel like Danny Miller is the master. I really do feel like Danny Miller is where it's at. What's your perspective on the video and the song and Danny Miller and Surfport?
Well, yeah, I like Danny Miller. I like Surfport. The other project she has, Trash World, I think.
Trash World's like her dance band with a mod. I forget. She's a professional model. I forget her name. That's the other person in Trash World. Sarah.
I like them.
Sarah Pardini. Trash World is Danny Miller and Sarah Pardini.
Okay, cool. So yeah, like everything that like she's put out or been a part of, like it's been pretty good. Like you were saying, with every solo track that comes out, like I wasn't sure what to expect with this one. Just with the title, I thought it was gonna sound a little bit more like Fuck You, I'm Hot, and kind of more in that vein. So I was kind of surprised when it wasn't. But like her voice is nuts. You know, like it fits so many different genres and so many like different tempos and so many different moods and stuff. This isn't my favorite of her solo tracks, but like it's not bad. Like I've listened to it a couple times now. The video was just okay. I like the difference, like the juxtaposition, I guess, with the like old movies or like you know, like that footage, and then she's kind of there, like with a giant, like a lollipop kind of thing. Her makeup's done really nice, so yeah, I'm excited to see what she releases. Because again, like it's always fun listening to someone who doesn't do the same thing twice, and you can really see like she's having fun with it and like kind of stretching creative muscles instead of sticking to the same formula.
What do you think's going on with Surfport? Because they put out, they say we're going to put our first track in like 3 years, which they did, and then we didn't hear any. And that was about 4 months ago. I mean, I feel as though there's chaos within. I feel like there's been chaos within Surfport ever since their second album, which was an amazing album, but got like almost no press, and they didn't really promote it at all. And that part of it because they put it out on SoundCloud, which I think was kind of a mistake, honestly.
Yeah. Like, it had good songs. There were good videos. We talked about it on the podcast. But, yeah, like, I always forget about it because it's, like, not accessible. I don't go on SoundCloud unless it's, you know, for premieres or whatever. So I don't know what happened, but yeah, it definitely seems like something's gone on. I wouldn't be surprised, and again, just based on speculation, right? But I wouldn't be surprised if there's a like a lineup change in the next like little bit.
Interesting. I hope either Surfboard does pull through, put out a third album, or
Yeah.
I hope Danny Miller puts out a solo record with all these different kinds of songs on it. Like I said, Hard Way blows my mind, and I think the other solo tracks are super good. We got one last story. The Damned are doing the 50th anniversary show. The open, and that's going to be April 11 at the arena in the Wembley Arena, which is a pretty big venue, almost 13,000 seats. Which for the Damned, that's pretty big. When the Damned play Philadelphia, they play about 500 to maybe 1,000 seaters. But, you know, in England, of course, they're probably bigger, and it's their 50th anniversary. So hopefully it sells out. I think it'll probably sell pretty good. The lineup, of course, is now, I guess, maybe the classic Black Album lineup: Dave Vanian, Captain Sensible, Monty Oxymoron, who actually isn't on the Black Album, not Roman Jug, Paul Gray, rather, and Rat Skybase. Back in the band again. Quite sadly, Brian James passed away not that long ago. I feel like if Brian James was still alive, I mean, he would have been there, which is kind of sad.
I think so too.
The opener is kind of interesting. Peter Hook and the Light, Mark Almond, of course, of Soft Cell, and the Curettes. And I was kind of, I guess I don't know what I was expecting, but I was kind of surprised by these openers. Very 80s-ish. I don't know about the Curettes, but you know, Soft Cell and Peter Hook, very 80s-ish, honestly. Do you think the band selected these openers, or do you think these openers were brought to the band, or do you think it was a combination? Like I was really surprised by Mark Almond, although maybe he's like you know, I know that Captain Sensible loves garage rock and psych, and Vanian I think likes kind of like bands like the Dart, not the, well bands like the Darts, but also the not the Blu-rays with
The
Lisa
Bell Rays?
Bell Rays, yeah. Like I
Yeah.
know he really's into that kind of stuff. So this lineup, the openers kind of surprised me. And what do you think of the lineup? What and are you going to be flying out for this show?
I'd love to. Hey, if anyone's listening to this and wants to fly me out to the Damned show, put me up for like a week. Please. I'd love to go across the pond. I got a passport and everything. So with the lineup, I'm not familiar with the Corettes.
I just looked them up. They're a Denmark band, a Danish band. I believe the
Oh,
singer is from Brazil. It's two people, and they actually do what I would expect to open for the Damned, kind of garage rock soul type stuff. That's what I expect. And
oh,
not that I'm
interesting.
against Peter Hook opening or Mark
No.
Almond opening, but that caught me by surprise, frankly.
Yeah, I kind of got that with Peter Hook and Mark Almond, like they have a connection with the band, maybe like they've known each other or they're friends or something, and that's what they're doing. That was kind of the thought I had. I do think it would be a really cool like Peter Hook and the Light would be a really cool opener for the Damned, because like I think it would segue really, really well. So I think it's going to be a really cool show. I'm looking forward to seeing some stuff about it, like hopefully some videos and see how everyone's doing.
Do you think they record it? Because the Damned actually record a lot of live concerts.
Maybe. Oh yeah, because they recorded the like what was it, Night of a Thousand Vampires?
Night of a Thousand Vampires.
Yeah, that one was cool. I liked that one.
They recorded their, thankfully, they recorded maybe not all, but a lot of the reunion shows with Brian James. They record at least five or six of them, which is kind of cool.
All right. You know what? Yeah, I think they're going to record this.
Do you, they record their 40th anniversary show. They record their 35th anniversary show. They record their Machine Gun Etiquette anniversary show. Do you think, M, what do you think the set list is going to look like?
Yeah, because on here it's like we haven't made up a set list yet, kind of thing. But 50 years, I think. They're going to have, I think they're going to do decade by decade, kind of.
That's interesting.
Like, I think they're going to have at least, ooh, that would be a lot of songs. It would be fun if they did 50 songs, like 10 from each kind of era. But that'd be a long show. But I think there's going to be a pretty even split between like decades. I don't think it's going to be here's era one and here's era two. I think they're all going to be like mixed together, but I think it's going to be a pretty even split. What do you think?
You know, the Damned are interesting. Well, the Damned are interesting, but that's kind of a tough road in that with the Night of a Thousand Vampires, like they did a very special set. Like they put a lot of work into a unique Damned set. But the last few times I've seen the Damned, it's been awesome, but I wouldn't say the set list is particularly clever. You know, it's basically the hits from the 80s, some of the early stuff, and a little bit of brand new stuff thrown in.
Sure.
I haven't. And when they did Punk Rock Bowling, not this past time, but the time before, they did All Machine Gun Etiquette, which was cool. But it feels like they're kind of just maybe doing the hits, you know, and maybe like one deep cut. And in a way, they've got what we all call AC/DC syndrome. AC/DC has to pay Back in Black. They have to pay Highway to Hell. They have to pay For Those About to Rock, We Salute You. They have to play a whole lot of Rosie. They have to. There's so many songs they have to play. And then when they don't play hits, when AC/DC doesn't play hits, the audience gets rowdy, bored, and upset. So all AC/DC can only play the hits pretty much. Like only, you know. Rolling Stones, same thing to a lesser degree. When I saw the Rolling Stones in 2005, like the big thing was they played a whole bunch of deep cut B-sides. The audience was not into it. I was into it, but the audience would – I distinctly remember me walking out of that show and being like, wow, I can't believe they did like She's So Cold or Heartbreaker or something. And I remember one guy saying, this was out in State College, which is kind of central PA, one guy going, I didn't know half the songs they played. And like he was mad about it, you know. And I'm like, I remember being angry at him. I'm like, you don't even know the gift that you just got. And ever since that tour, the Stones have basically done greatest hits with like three or four deep cuts sprinkled in the middle, you know. With the Damned, they're probably not quite as beholden because your average Damned fan is probably more versed in the Damned than your average Rolling Stones fan, who is less versed in AC/DC than the average AC/DC fan. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So the Damned do have that trapping, if you will. So I think they're going to do the thing that's been done by some other bands before, but it's usually pretty cool. I think you're going to start with a brand new song and work backwards chronologically and end with the first song, which would be cool.
That would be cool. Be like a reverse time warp.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is going to happen. Or that's what I hope is going to happen. But they might just do like, you know, a hit set, basically. And then they'll end with This Might Be the Last Time, which they've done numerous times before, which is kind of funny. Anyway, Em, today's episode kind of blew by in a flash.
It went really fast.
Anything else you want to talk about?
I'm trying to think, because it's like so much stuff it feels like has happened.
Well, what's happened?
It's just kind of been one of those weeks where it's like, it feels like it should be Friday, but it's Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You mean punk news-wise or your personal life-wise?
Both.
I'll say news-wise, it's felt a little slow, frankly. I mean, nothing's crazy has happened. It's basically, so-and-so's got an album coming out. You know, Billy Idol just repressed 3 records, which that's cool. You know, I've got them already. I've had them for years. But like no like crazy news stories or shocking things or anything like that, which in a way is good, but also in a way, you know, makes for kind of boring news, you know?
Well, there's actually something cool with Polaris stuff.
What's that?
So Polaris has obviously like the main prize and stuff, and they also have a heritage prize. And this year they announced the first new prize since they announced a heritage prize in 2015. So it is the SOCAN Polaris Song Prize. That's in partnership with the songwriter, SOCAN, which is a songwriter thing in Canada. So grand prize takes home $10,000, which is split between the Canadian musicians who perform on the track and the credited Canadian songwriters. So
what happens if it's like 3 Canadian songwriters and 1 American songwriter?
The American songwriter doesn't get anything.
That's lame.
But like you have to, there are certain criteria that
feels nationalistic to me, Em. That sounds, what's what I'm looking for? Culture centric or whatever that phrase is.
That's a point, though, because like Canadian music and stuff gets like sidelined so much.
Well, maybe Canadians ought to write better music, Em. Maybe Canadians ought to write better music and rise above. If Celine Dion did it, so can someone else. Do Canadians love Celine Dion?
Canadians like Celine Dion.
Is she like Bono in Ireland? everyone in Ireland loves Bono. So does everyone love Celine Dion?
I think so. I think Celine Dion's up there. Yeah, everyone loves Celine Dion. I think everyone also loves Anne Murray.
I don't know if she's Canadian. Anne Murray's Canadian?
Yeah. Anne Murray's Canadian. She's from the East Coast.
It says here that Celine Dion is the highest selling Canadian artist ever.
I believe it. She's made some records. But yeah.
She's got 13 brothers and sisters.
Big family. She's from Quebec.
That's crazy.
Her first, I think 3 albums or something are in French. She didn't start singing in English until her manager kind of was like, hey, do you want to do this?
I didn't know she went all the way back in 1981. She looks like she's about 12 on her first record. How old is she?
She is.
1981 is her first record. She was born in... Welcome to the Celine Dion podcast, people. She was born in 1968. She was 14 on her first record.
Yeah. She's kind of child star sort of thing.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Did you know that you ought to know. Who's that singer you ought to know?
Alanis Morissette.
Did you know she started out as a pop diva? Did you know that?
Yep.
I had no idea. I saw this video. I thought she was like she came out the bat as Lilith Fair type stuff. But she was a pop diva before that.
Yeah, her record label, I think, was trying to push certain things. It's the same thing with Avril Lavigne stuff. She wanted to make a certain type of music. Her record label didn't really want that. They found her when she sang, I think it was a Leanne Rimes cover or something.
Celine Dion's first 8 records are in French. And I would say from a pure business standpoint, that's probably a very foolish move. Because almost no one in the world speaks French. You know what I mean?
Oh, no. That's a really, really, really good move. The Quebec scene alone is it's a whole separate, industry. What we know about Quebec music is, less than 1%. They have their own, thing. It's wild. It's amazing. People, go absolutely nuts for it.
But Quebec only has 500,000 people. So even if every single person in Quebec bought a record, I'm still not going platinum.
There's still France. There's still a lot of countries that were colonized at one point by the French. They have a lot of French speakers, or they speak in a dialect.
I mean, are people in Haiti buying Celine Dion records?
Maybe. I don't know. Mm. They could be. Well, it depends what their relationship to the language is.
Well, I mean, they speak French in Haiti.
But it's the language of their oppressors.
It's the language they speak, I mean.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could argue English is too. But anyways, so the Quebec music scene is really something else. There are so many artists who get super big in Quebec.
See, Haiti has 12 million people. In France.
That's Haiti has way people.
More people. Has way more people. See, I would market Celine Dion to Haiti.
They'd probably like her, or they probably already like her. Who doesn't like Celine Dion?
See, because people in Haiti have such deep pockets to buy records, and it's not the poorest country in the world. That's why I would market to Haiti.
It's all you've solved Celine Dion's career.
Well, anyways, anything else you want to talk about tonight, Em, instead of Celine Dion? Why'd you bring up Celine Dion to begin with, Em?
You did.
Oh, yeah.
I was talking about the Polaris Prize. But anyway. The Polaris Music Prize, Song Prize, has released the long list, which is 20 songs. And there's some cool punk stuff on there. We have the OBGMs, Changes featuring Sate. We have At Peace by Propagandhi. We have Wrong Planet by Ribbon Skirt. And then a lot of other really cool stuff. Backwash has 2 songs on there. She has A History of Violence and Ninth Heaven. And there's Snotty Nose Res Kids, who they have Free on there, which features Ace and Abby, Dreesus and Reuben George. So, and obviously lots of other really cool stuff. There's also Constant Love by Richard LaViolette, which is one of the most just heart-wrenching songs you'll hear. It's very nice. So anyways, that's exciting and that's new. So CanCon.
M, you are locked in a room and you have 15 minutes where you can ask either David Byrne or Celine Dion any questions you want, and they have to answer truthfully. Who do you pick?
Ooh. Ooh. Celine Dion.
Why?
I think she'd have more stories, and I think she'd be more open and willing to talk.
No, but they have to answer any question. They have to answer any question.
Okay. So, but like, do they have a loophole where it's like if you ask them like what was your inspiration for this album and they just go art. You know, or do they have to give you like a, you know?
Good question, Em. Good question. Here's the answer. They can't lie or be purposely deceptive. But if they're like, let's say it's Andy Warhol is always vague. Like, you say, Andy Warhol, why do you want to make soup cans? He might just say, like, the wind told me to. And he's not lying. He's just being Andy Warhol. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm
See,
still going Celine Dion because I think she'd have more stories. Who you pick?
I picked David Byrne because, A, I want to ask him, like, what do you think of yourself, David Byrne? Do
Oh,
you actually hate the
interesting.
other talking heads and so forth? And I would really put the squeeze on him, you know?
What do you think he'd say?
I think deep down he hates himself, or he's extremely insecure, even though he's massively famous. I think he's sort of egomaniacal in that he believes he should get all the credit for the talking heads. But maybe deep down he knows that, actually, maybe he truly does feel as though he should get all the credit for the talking heads. Because if he really is an egomaniac, he would believe that he should get all the credit, right?
Oh,
Or
yeah.
does he want to believe that he should get all the credit, but he knows deep down he shouldn't get all the credit?
Yeah, and that kind of like eats at him.
Yeah, see, that's what I think. See, because if he really thought he should get all the credit, he wouldn't take swipes here or there because he wouldn't care. Like you don't take
True.
swipes at someone that you don't see as a threat at all. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm walking down the street and a 5-year-old yells at me, "You're stupid," I'm not gonna get mad at the 5-year-old. I'll like laugh and keep walking, you know. But
Of course.
if I actually did feel I was stupid, I would like flip off the 5-year-old. You see what I'm saying? So he does feel the other talking heads are a threat, so he would say that. You know what I mean?
I think so.
And he's
Yeah.
mad that he's got Greg Ginn syndrome. He's mad that other people get praise, even if they get less praise than him, he's still mad to get some praise. That's what it is, you know.
Interesting. I like
So
Greg
yeah.
Ginn syndrome. We need to like make that little
Same syndrome
entry.
as Alex Van Halen syndrome.
Oh,
Same
true.
syndrome as there's someone else. Oh, Dave Brock of Hawkwinds. They all got the same syndrome, Em.
When will a cure be found?
Well, we'll leave that till next week. So, M, when will we have the answer to when the cure will be found?
Next week.